What's the game-changing realization that helped you build a high-performing team? That question is at the center of every episode of the HR Impact Show. Every HR professional wants to build a team that has empowered managers, engaged employees, and an organization that's striving to become elite. The challenge is that you're often told to do more with less. We're going to fix that. Every week, we will feature executive and senior HR leaders from across the country, and they will share with us their actionable insights and best practices that's going to help empower you to create an engaged, elite workforce. Here's the show. Thanks for joining us today on the HR Impact Show. This is your friendly neighborhood talent strategy nerd, Dr. Jim. If you want to build a real culture, you've got to embed the values of that culture at every stage of the employee lifecycle. But here's where it gets tricky. If you're only doing just that, it's not enough. That's a good first step and better than nothing. But if you're not translating those values into behaviors and action, you'll never actualize the culture the way that you're thinking. That's the argument that Candy Gongora makes. Who is Candy? So let me tell you a little bit about her story. She is the Chief Transformation and People Officer at Goodway Group. She has extensive experience in people operations, process management, strategic planning, leadership development, and corporate training. Previously, she led Park Place dealerships to multiple performance awards, including the prestigious Malcolm Baldrige Award, and she helped Coca-Cola Enterprises implement an adult education program for manufacturing employees and a first quality system similar in scope to ISO. Candy, welcome to the show.
Hello.
I know that we touched on some of the stuff that's in your background, but I think the first step that we need to take is to get the listeners tied into some of the things that you feel are important. Tell us a little bit more about your story and the things that you've accomplished throughout your career.
Thank you. The main thing is that I am a lifelong learner, and many people say that I live it every day. I'm curious. I'm very curious. And that led me down the path where I am today. I actually went to school to become a psychologist, became very interested in business and focused there. And then I also became interested in learning and how people learn and how can we use that to change the direction of the workforce and where we're headed. So I ended up in education, didn't start in HR, ended up here in a very different way. But my focus has always been around development. And what does that mean for the business and for the client? And so my path has taken me down many different areas, including, as you mentioned, the ISO quality system at Coca-Cola, where I learned all about processes and process improvement and how that really creates clarity for people and help us develop not only our current jobs, but see what we need for future state. And then I also help educate employees at Coca-Cola to read and get their GED. It was the first of a kind of any of those programs in Texas. And so that was very interesting. But then also, when I went to work at a car dealership, most people think of that as a not so great experience. And our goal there was to make it an amazing experience. Buying a luxury automobile is a big deal for a lot of people and should be celebrated. So we benchmark people like Ritz-Carlton, Four Seasons, Walt Disney, and we learned so much. And we built an organization that was not about selling cars, but about providing a service and experience for our clients. And so I've taken all of that learning and brought it to where I am now at Goodway. For me, I'm still focused on the client and the employee experience because I do believe that is going to bring the best results for everybody.
One of the interesting things about your background that caught my attention, you have this interesting intersection between psychology and education, and mm-hmm. then you have a development emphasis throughout your overall career arc. How do those three things intersect when it comes to your overall people strategy and how that shows up in the organizations that you've been a part of?
It's interesting because when I was in school, industrial psychology was not a big thing as it was after I graduated. But it does come to play when you think about people. It's you do think about behaviors and you think about how do we change mindsets? How do we create clarity to create the goal of where we're going, and then how do we create habits or different signals to get us there? And a lot of that goes back to psychology and behavior. And then you also think about the part around the result we're looking for, which is not focused on the result. It's focused on the actions to get us there. And I think a lot of the work that we need to do or what we're looking to achieve, you have to take all of those things from the different disciplines and see how they work together or which one is going to give us the most optimal result at the end. And I think having that in my background helps me think of it in different ways through those lenses, but then also how to bring them together.
You've been at Goodway for almost 8 years, and that was that was after having spent almost 15 years or 16 years in the auto space. What's the biggest thing that caught you by surprise when you made the transition into this role?
The speed in which the industry changes. In the automobile industry, we truly were one of the leaders at the time, both in innovation and then what we were trying to do to change the car buying and servicing experience. But we had time. So we could create a plan. We had a full year, if not longer, to execute things because we were changing the game in many ways. And then I came to advertising, and the industry is constantly changing the game and constantly looking at ways to do things differently. So we are in a very fast-paced industry. And so I think that was very, very different for me because although we worked fast and efficient, I believe this is totally different. We do plan for a full year and we look out 3 to 5, but we revisit quarterly and truly do make pivots at times because of things that are changing, things that come up with privacy. There are just so many different things that we really have to stay focused on that changes our direction. And the auto industry is just slower.
When you look at that pace of change in advertising compared to auto, how does that show up when it comes to the blocking and tackling of people leadership?
Like, onboarding has to be faster. And we have to really be aware of our knowledge management and how we look at that to inform our employees. So for example, at my car dealership experience, we focused on onboarding. We had a week-long program. It was really 6 weeks after that program that took people through everything they needed to know to onboard well. Here, we need them working and providing their expertise and what they bring to the table within a month, if not sooner. We still go through the onboarding experience. We just had to change how we got there and how we provide to them what they need along the way versus front loading everything and then they can go. So I think that is a huge change. And I also think that because we changed so quickly, I mentioned the knowledge management, where that comes in. So many times we're making changes to whether it's process, point of views, decision rights, key things in our operating system. And so we have to document those. We have to have that information to keep people up to speed once they join us and they can know where to go to get the most accurate information. And then learning also knows where to, you know, create the pathways there for the new people. To me, that's vital. Otherwise, we'll bring people in and they are trying to onboard, but then also behind. And we've lost some of that knowledge that we put out there while they were either onboarding or before they arrived.
When you're looking at increasing the pace of onboarding and also the quality of onboarding and making onboarding more of a sustained process. What you're describing is pretty challenging if you have a single point of entry. So how did you democratize all of that information so that it's not purely the HR function that's taking all of that responsibility?
So there's many different ways. One way is looking at our behaviors, which most people will call values. And so we look at that and we determine, what does that look like? How does it actually feel to be in the role here and need to show up at meetings or show up a certain way? And those behaviors really demonstrate that for us. And that goes throughout our whole system. Even though HR coordinated that and was the project manager putting those in place, it's owned by the organization and by the leaders. So that's one way. And that really signals to everybody, we do things here or how to be successful here. Then we also have pathways or skill pathways where the leaders and the functions and the different businesses and brands that we have, they're responsible for identifying those and working with our leader in L&D to create those pathways. But when we work with SMEs within the business, we don't do all the work. So there's another connection. We have the processes that, again, people in the brands or their line of business, their function, they own those, but we create the framework of which they live in. That work is used in the onboarding to help signal to the employees how to do certain tasks or how to co-collaborate across our different brands and lines of business. So there's a lot of different things that we have created the framework for, but we need the SMEs and or the leaders to execute or to give us the information. So it truly is a partnership that starts with us. They'll start with us, but then they work their way down from learning about the org to their function, to their team, and then really on the client team, even deeper down.
It's really interesting how you described creating the frameworks that the SMEs and the leaders own. One of the challenges that comes up in a lot of organizations is this belief, it maybe this is more common in smaller organizations, that leaders will push back and say, that's an HR thing. HR needs to handle it. I don't know if you encountered it, but if you did, how did you overcome that resistance from the business leaders who didn't want to take ownership of these things and make it relevant for their functional groups?
It starts with what we're trying to achieve. We're all trying to achieve the same thing at the end of the day. We just may see how we get there differently. And I think part of it is understanding how they're seeing it, the business leader, because they have a responsibility too. And then sharing with what we're looking at and what we're trying to achieve, and then how do we bring that together? And so we try to think of what's a good metric, what's a good measure, what are we trying to change here in the business? It's not an HR program that I'm worried about. I'm worried about what result we're trying to achieve. So for an example, if we look at implementing team health, we have a process around where we have a role that will engage with our different client teams. These are client facing. And we go through an assessment with them once a quarter, and they let us know how their health is doing. How's communication? How are their processes? How's their skills? We have different things that we measure. We give them the results, and then they work with this person, if they choose to, this role, to improve their results, or they can do it on their own. Some teams are well-versed now. We have plays that they can use from our wiki online to facilitate it themselves based on what they're working on. So that could be pushed back because what are we doing that's taking time away from the client, and we don't have time for this work, or they're getting good results, so why do we care? So we look at that, and we look at other metrics that are important to the client, such as the NPS score, the quality of the work. There's different things that we can directly tie back to that process. And we can look at teams that are doing well versus teams that don't have the results that we necessarily need, or we want them to be better. And we have found that when we do this work and the team is really focused and functioning on all cylinders, the client work is better. We worked with some leaders to say, hey, can we pilot this? This is what we're going towards. We really want to impact client work. You do too? Great. Can we pilot this with your team and see what happens? And if it doesn't work, it's not the right questions, then we will relook at it, but can we at least try? And we got good results from that. They let us pilot it. We tried it. And so that worked on that process. And we do the same thing, the same type of process each time is, what are we trying to achieve? How does this help the client, the end client, and contribute to the business? And then can we pilot? And what can we learn from that? And that's the process we use. But we do make sure that we have a business metric that we're focused on, or there is a path to that versus what does this mean for HR and just the people side of the business.
So really interesting stuff, especially when you're talking about measuring the outcomes based on client feedback. So that client mindset, and if I understand it correctly, is applied to your external customers. Mm-hmm. How have you taken that mindset and encouraged leaders to apply that to their internal teams, having that client mindset in the interest of best serving their internal clients?
You mentioned the employee life cycle. How do we integrate things into the cycle? So we look at it a little differently too. We take that employee life cycle and look at it just like a customer journey. What is it like while they're here? And what's key? What are key moments? What are key things we need to consider? Some of those are for us to consider in HR. Some of them are for leaders to consider. And some of them, obviously, the employees are involved. When it comes to our people leaders, we've identified 8 areas where these are critical in this life cycle. And there are certain things that we need to do during those times, as well as we need to measure it and we need to look at it and we need to be able to coach our leaders to be better or learn from those who are doing really well and spend time with them to understand what they're doing differently and apply it in other areas. So we do have those 8 items. And then also, we're in the process of building a dashboard or a scoreboard for our people leaders. And it's in the sense of how do we develop and how do we coach to this versus I gotcha. It's not about compliance. And so we're being very careful about how we roll these out, how we're looking at them, how we support with tools, learning, coaching in these different areas. And so that helps not only us see how we're doing across the board, but our people leaders and their leaders can see and really truly make a difference with the data that we're looking at.
Wow. It's been a great conversation so far. Make sure you join the HR Impact Community, where we gather a community of HR leaders just like you. This is a space where top people leaders share actionable insights and practical playbooks. Sign up today as a member for the community. Get updates on the latest HR resources and exclusive event invites. You can join the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And now, back to the show. We're taking the HR Impact Show on the road. As a loyal listener to the HR Impact Show, we'd like to invite you to join us live at the 2024 Transform Conference at the Wynn Resort in Las Vegas from March 11th through the 13th. Transform brings together people-driven leaders, investors, and innovators across industries and backgrounds with a shared passion for people innovation and transforming the world of work. The 2024 Transform Conference is going to be the best yet. Here's what you can expect: innovative showcases, probing conversations, hands-on learning experiences, 300-plus speakers, and more. Join us and let's shape the future world of work together. Really interesting stuff that you've brought to the table, and I'm curious how that ties in to the idea of embedding values, behaviors, and actions into your organization. Tell us about how that's related, especially with bringing this down all the way to frontline contributors, because oftentimes we see that's where the breakdown exists. Managers aren't connecting with the big picture, and if managers aren't connecting, their people aren't connecting. So how is all of that related to the build out that you had within your organization?
What I just mentioned, even with the people leaders, our behaviors, which I mentioned earlier, are embedded in different processes, different frameworks, different assessments all throughout that life cycle. When we do bring people in, we do start with our behaviors and we introduce that. And as mentioned earlier, even in my last few roles, we had values. And I was very fortunate to work for some amazing organizations, and those values did not hang on the wall or sit somewhere on our desk or on a sticky note or anything like that. We actually lived them. So I had really good examples in my history. But what we have found when I first got at Goodway, where there were really good values and everybody held onto them so tightly, it was really amazing, honestly. And what we did see, though, is that they had different interpretations of it. So an example that really, really showed up was scrappy. And we are independent, so we definitely want to have financial health and we focus on that. And so scrappy was a nice way of saying we don't overspend. We don't fly first class. We look at ways, are there other ways to do something without buying the expensive tool? Can we be really resourceful there? What it turned into was, let's save every little dime. And sometimes in the short term, it saved us money, but it really harmed us in the long term. And so we could see people making those decisions, but they weren't wrong. If you look at our value, we just weren't clear enough as an organization. So we decided to look at it a different way, did some research, and came up with the behaviors of how we can truly paint a picture for everybody here on how these behaviors play out. So we took the value level away. We inserted the behaviors, which usually comes next. And then we gave descriptions. We gave great descriptions. This is when we're really living our behavior. And we gave examples of where this is not a good example of where we're living behavior. And that has really created the clarity that we needed to make sure that we are working well together. And it's like our standards of our ways of working, which helps us as we can be aligned on our strategic plan and all move in the same direction. But if we are behaving in different ways or we don't have that baseline, it can create friction, social friction, which is not good. And it can also create conflicts in how we're creating our system, whether it's through process or frameworks or even how we measure things.
If I'm paraphrasing what you just described, you've basically developed an institutional dictionary, and it's always good to have everybody operating out of the same set of definitions. So I think that's really good. What's interesting about what you mentioned is I'm still not connecting the dots on how you take that dictionary and embed that from day one of the employee life cycle. So me as a new employee coming in, I'm having like 8,000 things thrown at me through the onboarding process. And then we have this whole cultural value build, behavior build. How does a new hire keep all of that together? What's the process for making sure that it sticks from day one to day retirement?
Sure. So day one, when we're on video, you have the behavior deck, right? And so we purposely use a little connector. I can't think of what it's called, but it's like the circle that connects it and clips it all together, because we can take these cards out and actually play with them. We can do games to engage when we're in person, but also we can take behaviors out that no longer serve us and add some in if we see something missing. On their first day, they do get a deck of cards that has the behavior. It has which bucket it lives in, because we have three buckets: heart, smart, and grit. And then has the definition and the example. So when they start with us, as far as onboarding, we do go over the behaviors. We give examples. We talk about them. And if we even back up further, they're used in interviews. We talk about them in our interview. But when they come on board, we really want to bring them a lot to life. And we give examples. We let them work in groups and teams to come up with examples of how it could play out. What's their favorite behavior? Again, we can actually turn it into a card game. We have it both virtually where it's on screen, and we also have it where they can actually touch their cards. And so that's where it starts. What they also learn is our system for, you would call it performance management. We call it GPS, Grow, Perform, Succeed. In that program, there are many touch points around behaviors. So one example is how we are looked at each month when we check in with our manager, our people leader. We look at our success factors. What's going to make us successful here at Good Way Group? And one of the first thing that we look at is behaviors. And so we like to call out the behaviors that's showing up well for the month, maybe some behaviors that we need to work on based on the different client we're working with, maybe based on something internal we're trying to implement. Whatever the reason, it's very personal to that person about what they need to bring forth, turn on a little bit, where they're doing well, call that out. And then the rest of it is around impact and growth, which goes back to behaviors. You're not going to make as large of an impact if your behaviors are in the good place. And then also when it comes to growth, we can look at that again and add the behavior they need to improve upon in their IDP. And our growth questions really around, are you growing at the pace that we need? So it's not just about growing, but also the pace. And so sometimes a shortcut is tweaking your behavior, and that leads to even faster growth. There's so many ways and areas where it's integrated throughout the life cycle.
So there's something really interesting about the growth component that you mentioned, and you phrased it, are you growing as fast as we need you to grow? And that's important. How are you creating space for the folks that want to just become expert in the thing that they do and aren't really looking to move up into a leadership growth trajectory?
We absolutely have people who want to stay in their role and they don't want to be a people leader. And that is great. How we focus their learning there then is on the skills that they need to acquire for our future clients. As I mentioned, the industry is changing so quickly, and that's everywhere. I understand that too, but where skills that served us today are not going to serve us tomorrow. And it takes time to acquire those skills. Unless they're adjacent, then it may be faster. They're adjacent to other skills you have. So we do focus on that is either increasing your scope of work you can do because you bring on new skills, different type of clients you can work on. We do focus on staying on top of your professional game. Just if you're a doctor, you may want to be really good at this one discipline, but you're constantly learning within that discipline to stay on top of what's new and up and coming.
Good stuff, Candy. We've covered a lot of ground. We've covered what we need to do, why it's important to do it, how, when it comes to bringing values, behaviors, and actions to life, how do you get started? What's the framework that listeners need to think about in building this and putting it into action?
If you already have your values, you have a first step, especially if you really believe in those values, you believe they're right for your organization, they're right for where you're going with your strategy 3 to 5 years, then start with that. And under each value, list out what that looks like. What behavior are you looking for? How does that play out in the org? And that's one way to easily get started, just to see if there's something there. obviously, if you're not, you don't have values or you're not getting the results you need from your values, I would start from scratch and just start writing out what are some behaviors or some things that we need to see here, or that you, even if you've, you know, maybe some teams are really doing well, what do you see in there? Observe them, do a ride along. What do you see? And maybe jot down some examples of what you're seeing. And then I would use employees and describe what we're trying to do. What is the behavior? What's the difference? How does it play out? And so one of our behaviors is around making our meetings matter. And so there's a lot behind that. But meetings are a big deal in organization. They can either go well or they can be a waste of time. They can be very expensive. What are we trying to achieve from those meetings? And what does that look like on how we're going to achieve? So take some things maybe that are causing friction with your organization, and you don't have to worry about the wording, jot them down. What does it look like to be doing it really well? And is there something there? And start there, and then have employees give you feedback on it. Have employees send in friction points and get them involved. And that's one way to get started. I will tell you, there is a method to the madness that we did. We did look at David Friedman, his Culture by Design. He did talk about behaviors. It's a good place to start to see his examples of his organization, the work that they've done, and then turn it into what's important for you, like what's critical for you. So I think the key thing there is start with what you have if you feel like it's a good place. If it's not, start from scratch. But just start writing down, like painting the picture of what it looks like, and then get employees involved. And then from there, you have to think about, once you have them, they're not forever. So one of our behaviors is progress over perfection. So we don't wait for perfect. We're constantly putting our work out there really quickly to get responses and feedback, and how can we make this better? And so put something out there, have employees respond to it, see how it works, see how it works in your performance management system, test it with a couple of your programs and different things, because you are going to have to embed it and see how that works, and just test your way into a really good pilot. And then from there, you can continue to iterate it. But I think what's going to be the key part after you create the behaviors is, what routines, practices, traditions do you put in place that reinforce it? For example, we have a weekly drill every Monday that, well, we started out with a weekly drill when we first implemented these every Monday. That was a recorded video. And we introduced a behavior and talked to, and gave a story around it where it's been used well. And then we had backup materials. We did that for a good 2 years. And every week was a new behavior. We have 29, by the way. There's quite a few. And then when you, now we've moved on to our newsletter that goes out Monday morning. It's called The Beacon. And that a behavior is included in there. Sometimes we have blogs written by people. Sometimes we have additional, we have quotes to go along with it, additional learning paths to go with it. So we now, we've evolved our practices, but everybody looks towards that. And it's not about memorizing each behavior. It's about living it. So we try to think of practices and routines that help people live it day to day. And so think about those. That's what will come next once you have your behaviors in place.
Candy, if people want to continue the conversation with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
I would love to hear from you, everybody. I love to talk about this. I could talk about it all day. You can find me on LinkedIn, Candy Gongora. You can also find me on Instagram, K Gongora. I will let you know, Instagram's more about my dogs. I have 5 Australian Shepherds, but I do engage on some content there, and would love to hear from others who are either early in the journey, or maybe they have some ideas to share with me.
I appreciate you hanging out with us, Candy. There's a lot of stuff that I picked up from this conversation. I think when I reflect on everything that we talked about, there's a question that comes to mind that I think a lot of leaders struggle with, or a lot of organizations struggle with, and that is, what does good look like? And there's a couple of items that came out in this conversation that will, I feel, help a lot of folks spell that out within their organizations. And I think one of the most impactful elements of that is building a common dictionary. So it's fine to have your values stated out. And obviously, if you don't have those spelled out, you should probably get started on that if you're in the least bit concerned about building a culture. But beyond just listing or stating what those values are, you need to define what that means in terms of common actions, common behaviors, common impact. And I think that is one of the foundational things that a lot of organizations should do more of to get those new hires into your organization really living what those values mean and putting those into action. The other thing that stands out about the things that we talked about is that you emphasize an iterative process. And you mentioned progress over perfection is what you mentioned. And it ties into a lot of different areas. But the other thing that it ties into is from an overall people strategy perspective. There's space that's built in for people that want to move up into leadership roles, but there's also space that's built into the idea that you can grow vertically in terms of your capability set or your scope of role. So these are things that leaders in organizations that care about building culture, care about building a common way of showing up, should be paying attention to as they move forward in their journey of building high performance teams. So I appreciate you hanging out with us. For those of you who have listened to this conversation, let us know what you thought of it. If you haven't already done so, make sure you join the HR Impact community so that you can find that at engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And then tune in next time where we'll have another great leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build a high-performing team. Thanks for listening to this episode of the HR Impact Show. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time where we'll have another guest who's going to share with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.